town maiden tonight from Urbana, Illinois. Does modern art make sense? Here's Stuart Davis, Thomas Hart Benton, and Perry Rathbun. Hear all sides and make up your own mind.
Now let's have a few representative questions from our audience. Questions, please.
Mr. Davis, what do you mean by modern art?
Thank you. Next question.
Well, Mr. Benton, isn't modern art just a form of snobbishness?
Thank you. Question, please.
Mr. Rathbone, must art make sense in order to be enjoyed?
Thank you very much. Now, in just a moment, you'll hear Stuart Davis, Thomas Hart Benton, and Perry Rathbone answer these and other questions from our town meeting audience. So keep listening.
Tonight, your town meeting originates from the University of Illinois Auditorium on the university's beautiful campus at Urbana-Champaign, just 125 miles south of Chicago. Opened in March 1868 with 50 students and a faculty of three, the University of Illinois today has a student body totaling nearly 25,000. And throughout the world, it is known not only as a center of culture and learning, but as a laboratory of science and research. Town meeting tonight is a feature of university's fourth annual Festival of Contemporary Arts. By means of lectures, concerts, plays, and exhibits, the University of Illinois demonstrates to students and townspeople the creative arts in American life. The festival began on March 30th and will continue until April the 29th. Now to preside over tonight's discussion, here is your moderator, the president of Town Hall, and the founder of America's Town Meeting of the Air, George V. Denny, Jr., Mr. Denny.
Good evening, neighbors. Tonight we invite you to take an excursion with us into the ever-widening field of art. Our tour directors will be two distinguished American artists who hold sharply opposing views on what is good and bad in modern art, and an eminent museum director whose opinion seems to stand squarely between those of the two artists. Stuart Davis of New York City is one of the best-known spokesmen for modernists in contemporary art. His own works are on permanent exhibit in most of the leading museums of the country. He's a staunch supporter of the moderns and is here tonight to tell you why, and we are very happy to present Mr. Stuart Davis.
My position, Mr. Denny, is that only modern art makes sense in 20th century terms. Modern art is contemporary, yes, but all contemporary art is not modern. And the same applies to the contemporary audience. To many of our leading and most honored citizens, they suffer from acute anemia in their attitude toward art. In matters of social welfare, business, education, they come on like gangbusters. But where art is concerned, they either shift to neutral or try to back up and escape into the past. This craven flight from art reality has served to congest traffic on the avenue of progress of modern art, but never to detour it. I say this as a matter of personal knowledge. From the Armory Show in New York City in 1913, I have participated in its continuous development. I have seen an enormous growth in the audience for modern art, in spite of temporary regressions and isolated cases of desertion by artists, as when people like my old friend Tom Benton have said, I used to be an abstract artist myself. Actually, to ask whether modern art makes sense is the same as asking whether modern thought makes sense, whether modern scientific method and a decent standard of living makes sense, whether the principle of the integrity of the individual and freedom of communication makes sense, and ultimately, whether Western civilization in the 20th century makes sense. These are the things we modern artists have to work with, and how much sense we make with them is entirely a matter of how much sense we've got. The character of modern thought is most easily apparent in the way we live today. This includes modern art. Its popularity is apparent in its effect on every aspect of American life. In industrial design, in the packages you buy at your drugstore, the shape of your car, your house, your clothes, the music you listen to, all reflect the ideas of modern art. However, its value as applied art or as decoration is not its prime value. Painting as abstract art, pure art, if you will, Mr. Benton, has popular acceptance because more and more people have a chance to enjoy it today. It looks different from past art because the modern artist acts in a society that looks at life differently. Since public participation and appreciation of art is far greater than at any time in history, there has been a decentralization of patronage and a greater variety in art content, subject, and style. Today, you, the American people, are the patrons of art, rather than a few isolated individuals as in the past. Many people who should know better, Mr. Benton, have mistaken this diversity for an impoverishment of content. They have lapsed into confusing free individual expression with intellectual and spiritual poverty. Their patron-father complex is usually teamed up with a complaint that the images of abstract art are in a private language which no one but the artist can understand. The next time someone tries to sell you this line, find out what art dialect he is trying to use as a universal solvent before deciding. Art is a visual language that has to be learned by artists and public alike, and language is not a static affair. You have to learn to see as you have to do to read and speak. Actually, the non-representational idiom of abstract art has a more universal basis in everyday color and shape experience than the representational idiom. But the two do not exclude each other.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Davis, for this brief, comprehensive picture of modern art. You've made Mr. Benton very uncomfortable, although he's smiling as he wiggles in his chair. Well, if Mr. Benton had chosen politics instead of art as a career, he would probably have been a United States Senator from Missouri, like his great uncle, one of the pioneers who helped to develop the Middle West. Mr. Benton is known for five distinguished paintings that are in various buildings in Indiana and Missouri. Although he continues to work diligently at his painting 6 or 8 hours a day, he is an avid student of public questions and a staunch believer that art should reflect both the spirit and culture of its time. Mr. Benton, we are eager to hear why you differ so sharply with your old friend, Mr. Stuart Davis, Thomas Hart Benton of Kansas City.
One of the chief differences between I and my old friend, Mr. Davis, is that Mr. Davis is a highbrow and I'm simply a Missourian. But now, and I'll show you why we make that difference. Mr. Davis says right at the start that modern art is the only art that makes sense in 20th century terms. Now, let's see what the terms of the 20th century are. We began in 1907 with a major depression and failure of the capitalist society. 1914, we had a major world war. We had a big depression in 1929, which practically destroyed the Western society. We had another major world war, devastating one, to follow that, and we're still feeling the effects of it. Today, the terms by which man live over the world have not been defined. We are then in an utter state of confusion. I will agree with Mr. Davis that modern art represents those terms, the terms of utter confusion. Now, let's see. We'll go a little farther. I have to make my talk up as I go along. A little further, Mr. Davis said there, I'm reading him and quoting him, actually to ask whether modern art makes sense is the same as asking whether modern thought makes sense. Whether modern scientific method makes sense. All right, modern thought has produced, again, an absolute division of political opinion and social belief throughout the world. So modern thought has failed in a human sense to make us a decent life in the 20th century. Now let's take scientific method. Scientific method is all right. It produced a nice thing. Now let's file a few nice things. It's also produced a lot of commercial products which have enslaved you people. Half of you people through scientific method are slaves of gadgets. In addition to that, it has produced an instrument, the atom bomb, which threatens to destroy every one of you. So that I will say that modern science has failed in the 20th century to prove that it was of any human value whatsoever. Now let's go a little farther. I mean, you know, I'm ready to knock the scientists in the head for me. Let me see. Now, a little bit later, my good friend Stuart Davis says today he says to you people here, you middle Illinois people sitting here, that you, the American people, are the patrons of art, rather than a few isolated individuals as in the past. Well, now let's just see that. Who are the ones who patronize and support modern art? The first place we have to go, of course, is not to you people out here, but the sons and the daughters, mostly the daughters of 19th century millionaires who have a lot of surplus capital and who can afford to put it out amusing themselves with obscure issues. There we have that. Now, the center of modern art is located in the Rockefeller Center in New York. It could not go on there without the support of the Rockefeller fortune, Mrs. Rockefeller. It is also supported by American magazines, which represent the most conservative opinions in America. Why do they support it? For the simple reason they can afford to hide their absolutely conservative opinions by being very radical about something that don't count. Now, let's see here. Listen, I got to have something to say here myself, but I'll say one more thing about Mr. Davis. He has spoken... I'll let that go. I got through with Mr. Davis, and I don't want to do him any more damage. Now, let me put out something that'll damage me, so to give them something to crack at with me. I have another attitude toward these arts. When I am condemning the modern arts of Mr. Davis, unfortunately, I have to condemn the academic arts also, because most of them have not been able to get in touch with life in America. Now, I see art as an expression of the conditions and the beliefs and the behaviors and the whole spiritual content of a civilization. I mean, what people believe, what they think, how they're going to act, and so forth, and also the physical conditions, that it must express something and that the culture is at least agreed upon in order to be able to function within the culture. Now, all the great arts of the past have so functioned, practically all, and there are a few exceptions, great arts of the past. In the last 100 years, arts have been moving away from human meaning. That started 100 years ago. Here, with my old pupil, Jack Pollock, he got the final step away from meaning. Even the professor could not tell what the composition was. I mean, even compositional meaning as well, if you remember. But I got off the thing there, didn't I? Now, back to what I think. I don't think that you can have meaning which you as spectators can share unless some of the terms are recognized. If modern art, I would say now, if it wants to progress, I have no objection to the idiom. If it wants to progress, either it will have to get in touch with a symbolism which all you people understand, or it will have to represent things that you can recognize and on which you can build your ideas. My view of art is not that the artist is of the slightest importance. The person that's important is the spectator. There, they caught me on the end, sorry.
Thank you, Tom Benton, and even if you did hesitate a little bit, we're glad you threw away your script and just talked to us. Well, we have the makings of a great debate here. Now let's see what our museum director has to say on this subject. Does modern art make sense, or does the 20th century make sense, Mr. Perry Rathbun? Mr. Rathbun began his work in the museum field as soon as he finished his graduate work at Harvard University. First in Detroit, next to New York World Fair in 1939, and since August 1940, he's been director of the City Art Museum in St. Louis. We're very happy to welcome to town meeting Mr. Perry Rathbun of St. Louis.
My colleagues, Mr. Davis and Mr. Benton, have expressed themselves very well and very positively on the question of this evening. And I believe I find myself in the position of most of you in the audience. In other words, I agree in part with the views of both gentlemen, but only in part. I do not agree with Mr. Davis that modern art would make more sense if more of our citizens did not suffer from acute anemia in their attitude towards art. And neither do I agree with Mr. Benton that modern art is the exclusive darling of the coterie who read the same magazine, or that you need to have had a rich grandfather or a rich father to appreciate it. I've been asked a specific question in this discussion, and that is, must art make sense in order to be enjoyed? It seems to me a very good, sound question. By making sense, I might elucidate, we intend to say, does the work of art have meaning? At least that's what it means to me. My answer is yes, that it must make sense. It must have meaning to be enjoyed. And by that I mean, it must have meaning not for you in order to enjoy it, but not necessarily for everybody. All modern art may make sense as a visual experience, and it can therefore be enjoyed up to that point. Just as you might be intrigued or take a momentary pleasure in the chance ink stains on your blotter. But this is not a very deep or a very moving experience. We can therefore say that the more meaning a work of art has, the more it can be enjoyed. Human beings, in my mind, and I think in yours, are more interested in human beings than in anything else in life. Much modern art leaves human beings and our world of nature entirely out of consideration. I speak of art abstraction, or art that is merely imaginary form and pattern. Art has been a revelation of life through the ages, and that is what has come to be expected of art. Much modern art, Mr. Davis, is so stingy with its revelation of life that it can be said not to make sense or to have little meaning. Modern art, to me, is that which differs markedly from the enfeebled repetitions of the art of the preceding age. It is the art which employs new concepts, new visual ways of recording experiences, and new techniques. To apply the acid test, I submit that modern art is the art that has been, is now, and would again be ruthlessly suppressed, eradicated if possible, by a political dictator. My temperate view of this question is no doubt derived from my profession. In a museum, we are dealing with the art of all ages. And daily contact with that art teaches us that art is boundless, that the exotic, the imaginary, and the fantastic, those qualities that abound in modern art and often baffle us, have existed in art since time out of mind, and are only making a reappearance in our time and not a debut. It has been said that the purpose of art is to express feeling and to transmit understanding. I think that it is fair for you and for me to apply this principle to modern art. The modern art that I enjoy, that has meaning for me, I believe satisfies this principle. The modern art that does not, frankly, irritates me. And this the more so because I think it is natural for a man to admire above other creations those things that are the product of his own time and civilization. To me, then, modern art can both delight and frustrate. I do not pretend that I can satisfactorily explain the understanding that is in every case transmitted by a work of art, and I cannot give you any rules for judging it. I think it is fundamental that you keep your eyes open and your mind unprejudiced. And in the last analysis, since art is created instinctively, it will also be judged by your instinct.
Thank you, Mr. Rathbone, for throwing the ball so gracefully back into our lap. But now let's have a little discussion among you speakers before we take the questions from the audience. Mr. Davis, it's time we heard from you after that assault by your old friend Bill, Mr. Tom Benton.
Yes, well, I couldn't understand why he was associates all the troubles of the 20th century and the century preceding, why he associates that with the glories of those centuries, among which happened to be modern painting. Surely the painting, that great painting in the Chicago Art Institute of the Grand Jatte by Seurat, is not a plague of any kind.
Mr. Davis, painting...
Yes, right, Mr. Benton.
The painting that you spoke of in, by the Sura in the Chicago Museum was painted in the 19th century.
Well, you better dig out another one, Mr. Davis.
Yeah, well, so were these daughters who you blame for sponsoring.
I said the daughters, yeah. They came out of the 19th century, and of course, modern art, I think, clearly expresses the individualism of the 19th century, which is best expressed by the whims of high society.
Yeah. Well, I'm also a 19th century product, but sure. I make these wonderful paintings.
Any trouble are you? You live in the 20th.
I see. Yeah. Your question for him. Something further for him, Mr. Benton?
No. I want to get Mr. Rathbun on here because he hit something that bothered me a little bit.
Right?
I want to ask Mr. Rathbun. Let's get this quite sure. He said that a painting must have sense. Of course. Now, I want to know whether you mean there, whether that should have public or private sense. Because we may be agreed on this, but I want to find out whether we are.
All right, Mr. Rathbun.
I think it's too much to expect any work of art to make sense to all people. And therefore, my answer to Mr. Benton is that it's got to make sense to someone. It's got to make sense to you. But it doesn't necessarily have to make sense to everybody you know.
May I comment on that?
Yes, sir.
The behavior of an insane man makes sense to him. Now, we can't judge any work by the behavior, by the way the person who behaves thinks of it. You've got to have a more public, some kind of a more public reference. What do you say to that, Mr. Evans?
I quite agree with Mr. Benton, but I think it's impossible for the artist in our time to express any common philosophy because there is no common philosophy to which we all subscribe. And he's on the horns of a dilemma. And I think it behooves us to show him patience and understanding if we can.
I want to say one thing now. I want to really show that I do agree. There's a lot of things I really agree with Mr. Davis, and I do agree partially here with Mr. Rathbone. One of the things is, I know that eventually the meaning from a painting, I told you before, that it's a spectator who makes the meaning. Consequently, every painting has to have some private meaning to have any meaning at all. However, you as individuals can't find these meanings. The private meaning, you won't get private meanings unless you recognize the symbolism. The painting of the Renaissance of the 14th, 15th, 16th centuries was understood because the symbolism was understood. Paintings are just as good, everybody knows, as the modern things. Actually, the idioms of modern art, to which Mr. Davis described, I have no objection to whatever, if they brought more public meaning.
Mr. Davis? Well, I'd just like to ask Mr. Rathbone. I agree with much of what he says, but he had said something to the effect that a non-representative idiom, such as abstract art, has a very specific limitation intrinsic to it. Did I understand you correctly in that,
yes.
Mr. Rathbone?
Yes, you did.
Well, would you explain a little more why? Mr. Rathbone?
I think that we'll all agree that all art of every age and culture is basically abstract, that it exists on an abstract framework, which is part of its strength and what makes it endure as a significant expression. I think that to create works of art that are merely abstract, you do not provide enough enjoyment. You were talking about the enjoyment of art a few minutes ago. You do not provide enough enjoyment. I maintain that modern art, in many cases, is stingy with what it will give the spectator.
Mr. Davis, what do you say to that?
Well, the non-representative means, you associate that with the poverty of content. But you wouldn't do that with musical language, which is also non-representative, would you?
No. May I say something about the musical language? One thing, through the back long history of background, the cry, the tone, is connected with every kind of human emotion. Colors, all out, are connected occasionally. You have the blue of the sky, you have the green of the world. Those colors might call up such things. But their emotional intensity in no ways comes by the cry, as by the cry. For instance, if you were alone in a forest at night, the moon may be shining there, and you see it shining, light's there. But the thing, that may give you some satisfaction, but some little touch of a cry that you don't know or a noise you don't know will produce more emotions in you than anything you can see. So you have a basic emotional thing in music. That's why it's the greatest of the arts.
Mr. Davis? I think it's the greatest of the arts, too, along with painting.
All right.
he still stands pat.
Let me come now. I got to defend myself, too. I won't wash painting out either.
Mr. Rathbun,
And then shall we take questions from the audience? Let's take a few questions from the audience now before the station break. Gentlemen over there, standing, please.
This to Mr. Davis. If the man in the street prefers representational painting, does the artist have an obligation to do it for him?
Well, the artist is the man in the street. He's one of the men in the street. And the man in the street has all kinds of interests, all kinds of degrees of information. All artists are not alike. All people in the street are not alike. You cannot put some standard for modern painting which will be applicable for all people. As I said in my opening remarks, art has to be learned by artists and public alike. The fact that we have an art called abstract art today is an established fact. We don't have to speculate on it, whether it should be or should not be. It is. We have it, and it's enjoyed by thousands of people. It does not exclude the representative painting, illustration, or anything of that kind. We have that as a concomitant. The man in the street has more art available to him today than at any time, and a greater variety, and he chooses on that level to which he's capable to choose. All right.
I would like to comment on Mr. Davis's speech there.
All right, Mr. Benton.
Yes. He has said that the man in the street has more art, different kinds of art, offered to him now than ever in the history of man's life. I expect that's true. The only trouble, he doesn't want any of it because it has no meaning in the sense that we have agreed on public meaning. Let me ask this audience a question. I think we can make some decision about this meaning right here. Suppose all those who believe that modern art has meaning and provides sufficient sense say yes. All those who believe that modern art does not have sufficient meaning say no.
No.
I guess that's pretty easy. I thought I had that in my hand.
All right. You see what a well-divided audience this is, Mr. Benton. The lady over here.
Mr. Rathbone. We're just beginning to appreciate Scott Fitzgerald. Won't we see the sense in our contemporary painting in another 25 years?
I don't think that necessarily follows. It has certainly followed ever since, to quote, just to make use of a very familiar example, the days of Van Gogh. And just because an artist is unappreciated in his day does not necessarily mean that he's going to be appreciated in 25 years.
Thank you very much. We're making progress now. Just at this point, though, we have to stop for a moment. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment after we hear from our announcer.
If you heard last week's town meeting, you'll remember it was on the Kupover investigation. How should we deal with organized crime? At the close of the program, we asked you to answer two questions. First, how do you feel about the revelations of the Kupover committee? Second, what do you think should be the results of the Kupover committee? Your answers will be analyzed by Dr. Ernest Dichter, well-known psychologist. In 2 or 3 weeks, we will report Dr. Dichter's analysis of your answers. If you haven't already sent in your answer, we hope you will do so after the program tonight. Your answers to these two questions could have an important bearing on the solution of the grave problem of organized crime in America. I'll repeat the questions. First, how do you feel about the revelations of the Kupover committee? Second, what do you think should be the results of the Kupover committee? Address your answer to Dr. Ernest Dichter, Town Hall, New York 18, New York. Dr. Ernest Dichter, Town Hall, New York 18, New York. We will rejoin America's town meeting immediately after station identification.
This is WENR and WENR-FM, your ABC stations in Chicago.
Now, here's a gentleman with a question for Mr. Benton.
Mr. Benton, do you think Mr. Pollock could have achieved his present position as a non-objective painter if he had not first had a thorough training in the more traditional techniques?
I hate to comment on my contemporaries. I absolutely will refuse to do that. Jack Pollock was a student of mine, and I'm just going to let that slide because I'm loyal to my students.
Right, that's a very noble expression there. Let's take another question for you that you might answer from this gentleman over here, the red tie. Yes.
Mr. Benton, why should the contemporary artist appeal to the lowest common denominator of his audience, as you do, rather than attempt to raise the general aesthetic response?
That is what I would call a loaded question.
It's all right. I will answer that question. It is not me who have said that our art should appeal to the lowest denominator. As a matter of fact, what you have said there has made a statement. You have said that I appeal to the lowest common denominator. Of course, I do not. I am appealing to this very intelligent audience. I wouldn't call that the lowest common denominator, and I am appealing for an art which will have meaning for it. All right? Thank you. Right here. The gentleman right here with a question for...
Mr. Rathbone, has every generation had its problem of modern art, or is it something peculiar to our peculiar age?
No, I would say it was not entirely peculiar to our age. The annals of art are filled with examples of artists who are not appreciated in their own time. I think that the condition has been very much aggravated by our age, but it is not peculiar to our time.
All right, thank you. The lady on the aisle here.
To Mr. Davis, please. Does the non-objective artist paint to express his own feelings or to provide a medium from which the viewer may express his own feelings?
I didn't get it. Does the modern artist paint to express his feelings or to provide the viewer with a means of expressing his feelings?
I'd like to designate a non-objective artist.
The non-objective
artist.
The non-objective artist.
The artist paints to express his own ideas and thoughts, but as a person, he is not an isolated individual. His ideas and thoughts come from the same subject matter, the same environment, the same concern as that of large sections of the public, so that his communication, while primarily personal, is understandable to a great many people and represents identical interests with theirs.
Mr. Davis, just help out the puzzled moderator a little bit.
Yeah.
When this term non-objective artist is linked with a question such as the lady asked back there, how can a non-objective artist paint a non-objective piece with any objective?
Well, I'm not responsible for the term non-objective. I'm going to let it slide. I don't...
Isn't that a very wicked kind of term to perpetrate on an unsuspecting public, non-objective painting?
I thoroughly agree with you. And I include abstract art as an undesirable term and a non-descriptive of the content of modern painting.
We're really making progress.
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
All right, now the young lady over here, yes.
This is for Mr. Benton. Must you run down our whole way of life just to justify your stand in this question, which you said didn't matter anyway?
That's a pretty good little logical question. But I have not been running down the way of life. I didn't make the 20th century. That's the whole trouble with that.
Right. Thank you. Dean Rathbone?
Mr. Rathbone, do you believe modern art represents some type of internal conflict in the artist?
That's a puzzler.
Well, I think that's a rather broad question, and it would be impossible to answer it in a broad way. I think that there's an internal conflict in every artist, and there is in almost every human being.
All right. Thank you. Anybody want to comment on that question? No? All right. The young man here, please.
Mr. Davis, do you think it takes as much talent to produce a concoction of abstract or modern art, as it's called, or as it does to concoct something of representative art? I mean, it takes no talent to make ink blots on a blotter.
Concoct is an ugly word. Now, let's change it to paint.
Paint.
All right.
Your question is that an abstract painting, so-called, is easier to do than a representational painting, if that's what your question is, the answer is no, it is not easier to do. I know from my own experience.
May I make a comment on that?
Yes, Mr.
The question here, though, is that when Mr. Davis says that they are, one is as hard as the other, or that the non-objective painting is not easy to do, what he really means is that it's not easy to do a good one. Now, that I'll agree with, perfectly. But the only trouble is that we're back to that question of who's going to judge whether it's good or bad. I said before that the lunatic judges his own behavior as good. I don't mean to imply that Mr. Davis is a lunatic, but I mean it's something like that kind of a thing.
Yes. All right. Mr. Davis is glad you eliminated him from that category. The lady over here, yes.
Mr. Rathbone, please. Composition, color, lines, and shapes, aren't these the basis of any paintings, whether abstract, modern, or realistic? Can't one enjoy these as abstracts without having it in relation to recognizable objects?
Yeah, I quite agree. You can. And when you mention those elements, you're mentioning the language of art. That's what art is made up of. I simply contend that your pleasure in abstract art is a limited one, whereas your pleasure in more profound expressions, expressions that have to do with life and human beings, is a deeper, broader pleasure.
Thank you. Mr. Benton's going to have pleasure in commenting on
it. I wish to help answer that question. If it's about the possibility of responding to the mere material qualities of a painting. Now, on this, I think Mr. Rathbone and Mr. Davis and I are in absolutely full agreement. You do have to meet any painting, no matter when it's made, when it was made, through the material out of which it is concocted. After all, we do put this stuff together, and you only enter into its meanings through its material. Now, I fought modern art all this time, but I'm going to give it one word. I think it's done some good, even in its busted-down 20th century. It has made us aware of the fact that the materials of which art are made are consequential in its ends. Thank you.
Thank you. Gentleman over there.
Mr. Davis, how do you distinguish modern art from primitive art, especially since they both look the same?
Well, that isn't a question. That's a conclusion. You announce that they're both the same. I don't think they are the same. There are contemporary primitives, just as the primitives of the past were contemporaries of their own time, but all modern art and all modern people are not primitive.
All right, thank you. The gentleman back there was at number two. Yes?
This is for Mr. Benton. Don't you think that abstract art is the only type that allows a person to express individuality as an artist?
I have spent the evening saying no.
All right. The next gentleman.
Mr. Benton, to get back to symbolism for a minute. Can't there be a new symbolism established by an artist which the public must learn to understand?
I have also spent the evening in saying that it is not the artist who is important. It is the spectator who is important. My contention here is that until the artist is actually bringing out qualities which are within his culture, that he can't possibly be significant. Now, of course the artist is going to make new symbolism. That is, if art lasts in the world or anything else. I don't believe we're going to wipe the arts out. And eventually, I imagine out of these various idioms that people are practicing with now, in which they fight each other, even worse than Mr. Davis and I are fighting each other, there's something will come. Men, they will return in some respects to a representational art. Actually, I have no objection to a decorative art. They've been made through all history. An art without meaning. I mean, without specific meaning. Those have decorative values and use, and they have values, do I dare say, in themselves after all that I've said, but I'll let it go at that. There are certain values in things, perhaps for themselves.
Mr. Benton, suppose I ask you the question that Mr. Davis didn't answer. Is there any object to non-objective art?
I think you and Mr. Davis have brought this out here pretty well, that that's utter nonsense. Those are the terms. I don't think that would quite apply to the stuff that the non-objective painters make. Now, for instance, let's get back to this friend, former student of mine. I won't commit myself to saying that I like that. Now, this is, I believe, what they call non-objective art. Though their terms change so fast, maybe it isn't. Maybe there's another item, another name for it now. But I don't think those names make the slightest bit of difference. After all, look at the names of modern art. Begin with fauvism. What does that mean? Bunch of wild beasts. Takes on next, it's Dada. I don't know what that means. Then you have a vortices, people who go down in a vortex. And, well, I can name another one. Let somebody else have it.
Yes. All right, Mr. Benton. Thank you very much. We don't seem to have gotten a definition of that yet. Maybe some of our listeners will give us one. Now, the gentleman in the sweater there, yes?
Mr. Rathbone. As a museum director, do you find most people doubt the sincerity of artists who paint in a non-representational manner?
Would you repeat the question, please?
Do you find that most people doubt the sincerity of artists who paint in a non-representational manner?
I find that that is quite widespread. I myself don't agree with it. But I think that there's no question that many people do doubt the sincerity of non-representational painters. I myself think that almost every artist is sincere. But I do also feel that some non-representational painters have taken refuge in that idiom because they find they haven't got anything to say about life.
I thank you very much. Mr. Benton was leading with his chin right here, ready to comment, but our time is about up, so I want to thank Mr. Perry Rathbun, Mr. Stuart Davis, and Thomas Hart Benton for giving us the benefit of your views on this question. And our warm thanks to our host and to Dr. George Stoddard, president of this great institution, the University of Illinois. Now, in just a moment, I'll tell you about our subject and speakers for next week.
We've been told, and there is much evidence to support it, that tonight's question is one of the most controversial subjects in the country. Now that you've heard both sides, what's your opinion? Our town meeting bulletin, which contains the entire proceedings of each town meeting program, is printed each week for your convenience and contains a lively listener's comment section. Thousands of town meeting listeners subscribe regularly to the town meeting bulletin. A year subscription, 52 issues, is only $5. A trial subscription for the next 8 issues, including tonight's, is only $1. Individual copies are 15 cents each. Tonight's bulletin will contain listeners' comments on last week's subject. Next week's bulletin will contain listeners' comments on tonight's town meeting. So why not send us your comments on tonight's program and at the same time order the next 8 bulletins for only $1 or for the entire year for $5. The address is Town Meeting Bulletin, Town Hall, New York 18, New York. Now, to tell you about next week's program, here is Mr. Dennis.
Next week, a new book by Paul Hoffman, former administrator of the ECA and now president of the Ford Foundation, will be published. Its title is Peace Can Be Won. This important book will be the center of our discussion next week from Charlottesville, Virginia, where we'll appear under the auspices of the Woodrow Wilson School of Foreign Affairs at the University of Virginia. We'll discuss the subject, How Can We Win the War of Ideas? Our speakers, in addition to Mr. Hoffman himself, will be Senator William Fulbright, Democrat of Arkansas, and Marquis Childs, author and syndicated columnist. Now remember, if you want copies of tonight's town meeting, all town meetings are available at 15 cents each, $1 for 8 issues, or $5 for the entire year. The address is Town Hall, New York, 18, New York. So plan to be with us next week and every week at the sound of the crier's bell.
Town meeting next week. How can we win the war of ideas? Town meeting next week. Everybody listen.
Town Hall and the American Broadcasting Company have brought you America's Town Meeting of the Year. Your producer is Burr Lee. Your town crier is Fred Musfeldt. Warner Tiedemann speaking. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.